Trigger on!
Welcome, dear all, to the Duckface Diaries. We are a World Trigger read-through podcast aiming to discuss the World Trigger manga volume by volume. I'm Wensley Dale Cheddar.
And I'm Hovind with an H. And this month, as Karasuma would tackle the opposing team in college, we are tackling Volume 13, which covers chapters 107 to 115, and is covered in episodes 66 to 70 of the anime.
That was a strange comparison, and also it's Kurosawa.
Fuck!
Karasuma doesn't exist because there is only Scruffy Hottie.
God damn it!
Today, we welcome another special guest. They are fellow co-star and voice of Yuma and Jin in World Trigger Bridge, host of The Bard's Tales, a storytelling podcast, frequent guest on The Hideaway, and co-host of the now-defunct Samustream, our weekly manga review podcast. Let's welcome Dr. Nova. How are you doing, fam?
Hey, really, really happy to be here. I'm doing good overall. I just got my second vaccine yesterday, so I'm doubled up on Moderna. And it's very nice, but I am very sore and very sleepy. Which, you know, better symptoms than when I had my first shot, so I'm good.
I didn't react to my first shot well either. I'm so jealous. Everyone's getting the good vaccines. It's like Astra considered a good vaccine now, but because like earlier on people were like saying it was like 70% effective, but nowadays it's like 89 or something.
I believe it. I got Astra. I believe it's meant to get you up to about 90% efficient like immunity.
Johnson is the worst one, isn't it?
I don't know vaccines. I've not been keeping up.
I don't know a single person in Canada who's gotten a Johnson vaccine. So, it's hard to say.
I didn't even know Johnson was the name of a vaccine either, honestly. I know about Moderna, I know about AstraZeneca, I know about Pfizer, that's about it.
There you go, fuck you Johnson people!
Boom, roasted.
My partner lives in a place in Poland where I think that Johnson, owner of Johnson & Johnson, the guy is dead already, but I believe like back in the day he bought like a palace that is now a ruin there. Then he had a Polish wife who was earlier his like carer, so there's some interesting history going on with the Johnsons.
Actually, I believe it was the wife who bought it because she inherited the wealth after the Johnson died.
That's very interesting, Asha. Tell us more.
That's all. Thank you very much.
Wow, that's wild.
But we're not talking about the vaccines, we're talking about World Trigger, I assume. Let's go with today's agenda, maybe. So we're going to do a quick recap of Volume 13, then we're going to go ahead with our general thoughts, then do our Archie Horror Comments Corner, then a bit of a spoiler corner, and also an interview. After that, in place of our Q&A section, we're going to interview Dr. Nova and learn about what the World Trigger journey was like. Do you want to discuss any more vaccines, or shall we get to the summary?
Well, I was going to go on my designated D&D tangent, because I have spent all week just arranging character notes, and let me tell you... Yeah, no, we can continue.
Right then. Let's get to the summary. So, last we left off, Osamu was being referred by Scruffy Hottie to pick up some shooter tips from experts like Arashiyama and Izumi, so he heads to the Arashiyama squad's strategy room, clearly stressed out, and Kitora opens and he's like, But then he introduces himself to the operator Ayatsuji and shares the good dorayaki from the good store, which is a gift from Isami. And Tokieda and Kitora seem to be busy with paperwork, which the latter blames on Osamu. So thanks to him revealing the info about away missions to the general public, they have been getting a lot more new applicants, so they have to do enlistment ceremonies more frequently. So when Osamu shares that he'd like to score points by himself, Arashiyama advises that shooters don't generally do that, since the bullets are generally weaker in power than attacker triggers in structure, they need to use Trion for range and speed as well. He says the mid-range distance is perfect for supporting your teammates and keeping an eye on the battlefield, basically working your strategy, the team strategy. Basically confirms that it'd be useless to teach Osamu with that goal in mind, like Scruffy Hottie said. Nevertheless, he's prepared to give him some tips. Meanwhile, Chika, Izuho, and the evil kitty from Eftokrator head to the shooting range for sniper practice, where a grumpy, quiet lad with messy hair named Yuzuru Emma makes room for them, so they can practice side by side by throwing Toma's bag away. Now, when we get our results, it turns out that he's a strong contender, as alongside the number one sniper, Toma, while he doesn't get the highest score, he's definitely an accurate shot, making a perfect star shape out of bullets. Then Toma introduces Yuzuru to the girls and proclaims himself to be his mentor. Yuzuru himself refutes this, saying that the only person he considers to be his mentor is Hatohara, who Chika remembers as the former member of Ninomiya Squad, a sniper who went through the gate with her brother. Chika decides to ask Yuzuru a few questions about Hatohara, oblivious to the fact that the sniper lad may be developing a bit of a crush on her. Yuzuru's story about Hatohara is a little different than what Composed Beefcake told her. He says she quit when, despite her amazing sniping accuracy, she found herself unable to shoot people, something Boulder found to be a disadvantage, and something Chika very much relates to. Then Yuzuru's like, oh, wait, I'm your opponent in the next match. You sure you want to reveal that to me? And Chika's like, ah, whoops! Meanwhile, Komu Rakami wants to introduce Yuma to Yuzuru's captain, Kagura, one of the only four attackers Murakami can't beat. Even though he's stronger, he's still ranked the number 20 attacker, because as we soon learn, he loses a lot of points by getting into fights and violating border rules. We introduce him in his jaggy teeth glory as he beheads two C-rank agents badmouthing him. Kage doesn't care about his solo rank or the away mission. Sensing people's negative feelings about him through his side effects makes him way more frustrated. And if he's demoted because of that, then so be it. But he and his team won't give up the B-rank number 2 spot so easily, so they're sure to give Yuma's team a challenge. Yuma and Kage don't hit it off because the shrimp underestimates how much sensing every bad feeling somebody thinks about you would mess you up, but Ko says that they'll get along eventually. After all, when he fought Yuma, he felt like they were pretty similar. Meanwhile, Osama heads to ask for advice from Izumi, the number one shooter from Tachikawa Squad. Blocking his way is the third member of Tachikawa Squad, whose face looks especially like mine, but who is actually Yuiga we never learn, in disguise. So Yuiga is very proud of his rank and determined not—
I can't believe Wansiedale is a harem protagonist.
I was destined to be. So Yuiga is very proud of his rank and determined not to let a Tamakoma member enter the strategy room, but that changes quickly when Izumi dropkicks the shit out of him. After a rousing speech trolling Yuiga from Tachikawa, Izumi and Osama sit down to recount what he'd learned from Ashiyama and Tokieda. Shooters should focus on breaking down the foe's defenses, since otherwise a little Trion is actually needed to damage a Trion body, since they all have the same durability. And also, who would be the best option to attack? Osama wants to learn composite bullets from Izumi, but the A-ranker says without experience, he'd just leave himself open to attack. So as Tachikawa and Kanichika engage in some heated gaming moments, Izumi beckons over Yuiga and proposes a challenge. Battle of the two harem protagonists. If Osama wins against the weakest A-rank agent 100 times, Izumi will teach him composite bullets. Over to you, Nova.
Yuiga refuses the offer outright, however is pushed into the offer by Izumi. However, it seems that Yuiga's fears were unfounded, as he manages to best Osamu, only allowing our glasses-wearing protagonist to win 2 out of 10 matches. With his goal seeming further away, Osamu reconsiders their approach, though continues to train with Yuiga. We learn that Yuiga basically got their position via nepotism, their family being a huge supporter of Border, though, by bad luck, they got placed in Tachikawa Squad, not exactly allowing for the perfect ending they had in mind. We learn it's Chika's birthday, however for some reason they don't seem overly enthusiastic about celebrating it. They have a conversation about Chika's continuous unwillingness to shoot people, and before long, we move on to preparations for the next match. We check in with a few of the squads we'll be participating. Azuma Squad, the B-rank number 7 squad led by a sniper and 2 attackers, who seem to be putting together a good plan. We then check in with Kageyura Squad. Both Zoe and Emma, the gunner and sniper of the squad, seem surprised to find that their captain is actually watching logs, and they have some nice banter. We cut to a quick montage of training. Yuiga training Osamu, Yuma training with oh god, Konami, I always forget her name for some reason. Chika training with the Beefcake. What was his name again? What was his title?
Composed Beefcake.
Composed Beefcake. I always forget what that first word is. The training continues, and out of 200 matches, our glasses-wearing protagonist only manages to win 48. However, that is sort of a better ratio, so it is by the very least showing that though he may be getting a bit better, he still has a way to go. And finally, we arrive. B-Rank Wars, Round 4. We get to see that there are two very well-known A-Rank agents helping to commentate. Kazama Squad's captain, Kazama, and Kako's squad's captain, Kako, who kindly hands people Valentine's Day chocolates. The match starts, we get a shot of all of the teams entering a snow-covered area. Azuma Squad, who picked this particular map, seem to have a strategy when it comes to the snow, though that's yet to be seen. We get a few shots introducing the two other members of Ninomiya Squad, who we haven't seen up until now, Tsuji and Inukai, a gunner and swordsman respectively. Everyone is quickly bombarded with meteors from up top, and though no one is hit, we do learn that this is from Kitazoe, the gunner of Kagura Squad, who has two grenade launchers as their preferred weapon. However, Ninomiya quickly responds with an asteroid, taking out their foothold. Emma tries to use this opportunity to snipe Ninomiya, but fails. We get a bit more information about the various characters, including that there is actually an upside to Kageyura's side effect, that being that due to him feeling the emotions, sniping doesn't actually work on him, this allowing him to move much more freely in matches like this. Cutting to the Tamakoma 2 base, we see that Husei is also watching the match, along with Jin and Yotaro. Jin decides to make a bet with Husei regarding the outcome of the match. We then cut back, and Inukai has spotted Osamu. The battle between them starts, with Inukai easily pushing back Osamu. Meanwhile, Yuma is attacked by Tsuji, who quickly retreats as Kageyura arrives. Within a flashback, we see Arashiyama explaining different uses for the try-on bullets. And, hopefully, Osamu is able to get something from this lesson. Osamu is currently being pushed back by Inukai, attempting to escape, though finding the gunner's speed rather difficult to maneuver. However, we see that Osamu has set up a trap that, unfortunately, fails to work. Just as it looks like Osamu's done for, the attackers from Azuma Squad come over and cut off Inukai's arm. Inukai, seeming surprisingly unbothered by this, fires back when Tsuji arrives at their rescue. Osamu, seemingly in the middle of this, tries to regroup and come up with a strategy. However, it seems that those efforts come to nothing, as, from through the window, he is sniped and taken out by the Azuma Squad captain, referred to as the first sniper and the former leader of the first ranked A-rank squad. Osamu bails out, and the question remains, what's going to happen to Tamakoma 2 now that their captain has been taken out so quickly?
As Mikumo wakes up in his real body, it's commented that Azuma referred to the map's topography and the existing habits of Tamakoma 2 to plan this shot. While devastated and panicked, Osamu is urged by Shiori to continue relaying orders to Chika and Yuma from the operating desk. Much to the surprise of everyone, Chika manages to shoot the building the fighters are clustered in, but all the combatants escape the devastating but inaccurate shot. Inukai figures this was done by a radar rather than sight. What follows is a tense chase through the streets, as Chika is unable to follow Mikumo's order to bail out, with other agents, chief among them Inukai of Ninomiya Squad, hot on her heels. Side note, this chase featured some of the best animation cuts of the anime's first season, even though they look a bit quaint in hindsight by season 2 standards. Yuma is blocked off from her by Ninomiya Squad, but launches her forward with Grasshopper. In the midst of all this, Ima and Kageura launch a surprise takedown of Inukai, giving Chika the space she needs to bail out. When pressed on it by Ninomiya, who tracks and confronts him immediately, Ima insists that this is out of disdain for their squad, not sympathy for Ninomiya's, to which I say, why the fuck you lying? Oh my god. Anyway, Ninomiya gets in a hit, but Ima escapes. However, Ninomiya pursues further, and Ima is only able to stall for time until he's dispatched. The five attackers converge at the center of the map, launching into a particularly chaotic melee, with Azuma providing cover fire for his squad. Yuma in particular is targeted as limb after limb flies away from him in the carnage, The operators explain that it's actually more advantageous to Azuma's squad if everyone splits up, due to them having more range, despite controlling the area. They also point out Yuma's dire situation due to lack of cover fire, which causes a wave of regretful thoughts from Chika. Kitazo attempts to take out Azuma from a long range, but Azuma snipes all of his rounds before firing back. But Ninomiya, the point-stealing motherfucker, shields Zoe in order to capture himself. Kitazo doesn't even pretend it's going to go otherwise. He does, however, fire a last-minute volley of bombs into the attacker's melee. In the chaos, Kageyura takes down Okudera, and Yuma disarms Tsuji, only for Azuma to snipe him before Yuma can deal a critical blow. Yuma and Kageyura engage each other, each sending each other a relentless flurry of slashes when Ninomiya traps them in a rain of hound bullets. With no cover present, Yuma grasshoppers right towards him. However, this played right into Ninomiya's hand as he quickly fires right at him. Yuma's Treon supply failing him before he can even reach his opponent with his outstretched scorpion. Jin matter-of-factly acknowledges his loss, asking what Hughes wants of him. From this point, all bagworms are activated and agents disperse, leaving the match at a stalemate until it runs the clock. The victors are Ninomiya squad with 3 points. Gaining only 1 point from the proceedings, Tamakoma are moved down to 8th place. In the post-match commentary, Kazuma posits that the match was decided by the skills of the supporting players rather than the aces of each squad. Ayatsuji asks whether Osamu's early bailout decided Tamakoma's loss. Kazuma initially praises Osamu's efforts to try something new and his overall improvement. However, let's say, hypothetically, you're improving day by day. That means everyone else is also improving day by day. You can't catch up if you're doing the obvious. When pressed on if Osamu should fight closer to his skill level, Kazuma simply responds, "No, I'm saying he should do their job as a captain." Despite his harsh words, Kitora comments that she feels Kazuma is actually being fairly soft on Osamu. Back at base, Hughes is nomming on a fish pastry when Yotaro...
surely, the most important thing to note...
While Yotaro mourns Tamakoma 2's loss. Reflecting on all of the warnings and advice from the various A-rankers he received, Osamu meets Jin on the roof. His request? Jin joins Tamakoma 2. General thoughts?
Let's do it.
Okay, in my defense, not... but the way that Hughes is nomming on that pastry is quite funny, but...
It is quite a funny panel. So, this was one of the rare, like, late World Trigger volumes that kind of actually works really well as a volume.
Yeah, it ends at a perfect point.
Yeah, the structure of this worked really well, allowing to early on, to build up some growth in Osama and Chika, set up the struggles while also introducing charismatic opponents who would ultimately... utterly destroy them in battle. Structure-wise, I'm going to say I really liked it. So, what did you think about it, Nova?
This is a favorite volume of mine. I really like a lot of what it builds up. I really, really like the match. It's probably one of my favorite matches in the entire series, and I am a really big fan of all of the squads in this match, as well as the way the action flows. There's no real pause in this match, right up until the end. Everything is very fast-paced, everything is very kinetic, and it really does feel like, almost like a tennis match. There's no squad that's really taking out everyone for a while. I mean, obviously, like, quite a few members of Ninomiya's squad survived for a pretty long time, but it really does feel like everyone's taking losses, everybody's gaining points, and it really does give the impression that you don't know where the match is going to go until the end. In particular, what's amusing about this to me is that this volume actually contains the only World Trigger chapter I own in print, because I was actually in Japan while this match was happening, and I didn't read the online chapters because I wanted to have the experience of picking up the volume and going through Shonen Jump and seeing what happens. And the chapter that volume contained was the chapter that Osamu got sniped.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow, you were in Japan when you read this one.
and I just remember thinking at the time, like, oh my god, but like, because at the time it was really frustrating, because I was like, oh my god, all that build-up. But again, in retrospect, for the kind of series World Trigger is, it makes way more sense in retrospect. And the thing, again, it was in Japanese, so I couldn't actually read what they were saying. It was just like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. But no, it is a favorite volume of mine.
Yeah, this match hits really hard, and I really like how the rank battle kind of fizzles out at the end and kind of comes to a standstill until the time runs out. It really allows the reader to like process Tamakoma's defeat and let it sink in. So I thought that this whole battle works really well.
It's weird for it because this one, it kind of feels like, even though we are just discussing the volume now, for me it kind of feels like I've been discussing this volume in bits and pieces over the course of this whole read-through, whenever we go to the spoiler corner, because it's such a turning point, and such like a pivotal moment for Tamakoma. I think the big thing that really hits home how out of their depth here they are is the fact that it's such a desperate struggle for Chika to even manage a neutral retreat that doesn't gain another team a point. It's not even getting a point for themselves, it's just like trying to allow her to like bail out.
And that's part of what I love so much about what Kagayura's squad in particular brings to this match. Because there is so much strategy and conversation that goes into the way so many squads operate in World Trigger. And what's excellent about Kagayura's squad is they add this level of chaos that just seems to make everything just a little bit more off-kilter. You're not exactly sure what's going to happen. The fact that, you know, Kagayura's squad not only helps Chika escape, but also takes out Inukai in the process is just such a great surprise for the match, and what I still think is one of the best, like, match kills in the entire series, just where you see, like, Kagayura's glowing eyes from the sky. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's my standout panel as well. It's a small one, but it's really effective. Speaking on Kagayura, I find the way the side effect plays into his personality really, really compelling, because I feel like with a side effect like that, where you can just detect other people's, like, kind of emotions towards you all the time, that's going to have a very significant effect on how you view the world. And obviously, it would be different for different people, but it's very understandable to see why he'd become a very antagonistic person, why that could be kind of a defense mechanism for him, because he is bombarded with how people feel about him all the time.
Honestly, it's a miracle that he is as friendly as he is.
Yeah.
Completely, and it's also something, it hints at something that I kind of wish we got a little bit more of in World Trigger, which is sort of the dichotomy of side effects, because basically all of the big characters in the series who have side effects, they're pretty positive side effects. There's not really like a huge downside to them, but what's really excellent about Kagayura's is it really is back and forth. For the most part, it's really, really irritating, but it's really effective in this specific scenario where he can tell the emotion behind attacks, and because of that, it's hard to take him by surprise. It's impossible to snipe him. And those are the kinds of side effects I wish we got a little bit more of throughout this series, because I just find it so interesting.
It could be interesting, for example, to like maybe get a Jin flashback when he was discovering his side effect, and I could see how like seeing the future and having so much responsibility in how things play out could be a little overwhelming to like a younger person, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be overwhelming to me now, but I'm a disaster, so.
Oh.
I find it very interesting to comment on the pretty even nature of the match. I think the kind of the push and pull there is that, like, even though Asuma controls the match, the Asuma squad definitely, like, controls the map, which for the past three has kind of been... Has it been three matches? Wait. For the past few matches has kind of been the, like, what cinched it. It shows what kind of level of opponents we're on, where even that isn't totally enough to win the match. Ninomiya still gets by on sheer, like, skill and prowess.
It really is an excellent introduction to these squads as well. Because, like, Ninomiya is just such a fantastic antagonist, just in the sense that, like, not only does he not look bothered, he looks like he's casually walking around the match. Like, every time he shows up, he just has his hands in his pockets and is just like, hey, what's up? And then just murders somebody.
Yeah, his elbows are always behind him.
Exactly. He never looks stressed. He never looks like he's sweating. He never looks like he ran anywhere. He just happens to show up and just destroy whoever's in front of him. and it's such a good introduction to this character.
I bet he's running when the cameras aren't looking.
Oh, completely.
Though real talk, is all of their squad wearing suits hugely cool or hugely dorky?
That's the dichotomy that Nova was talking about earlier.
In my personal opinion, it's hard to say because I think it's hard when you put them next to Kageyura Squad, who I think just has such cool uniforms.
Yeah.
And then Azuma Squad, who their current uniforms were a little bit plain Jane. There is something so cool about like wearing a suit to battle, but then there's something so lame about like seeing their ties flipping around and just being like, that looks so inconvenient. Like particularly Inukai, who doesn't wear a vest.
Did you, for example, like notice Osamu's stupid that's not even in the uniform, just his stupid salaryman tie when he's at the Tamakoma base. It makes me think that he later becomes the dad from High School Family.
Oh, completely. No, it's just so... Again, the big gun belts do kind of take away from it, particularly for the fact that it's like, you don't actually need those. Like, you can just, like, snap your fingers and your gun is gone. You don't actually have to holster it.
I mean, if we're talking about, like, squads with, like, dorky slash cool outfits that I vibe with, I feel like this volume pretty much convinced me that Tachikawa Squad would be my jam to hang out with. Like, like they just goof off in their room or, like, they are kind of... I guess almost a bit self-insertish in that, like, they goof off in their room, but they're also one of the top squads, and they wear, like, these big, like, trench coats into battle, and they have, like, they just sit around, like, watching movies, and, like, their operator has a den where she watches anime and plays video games and stuff.
It is a really good payoff to find out, like, this is the third member of Tachikawa Squad, and it's just, like, a loser who got there via nepotism. Like, it is, like, a really good, like, oh, this is who this is.
And it's also kind of interesting how the top two squads of Border are basically Yuiga is a burden to them, so they're basically a two-person squad, and so is, like, Fuyushima squad. So it's, even Miwa squad has introduced that, yeah, there can be more, an Arashiyama squad, that there can be more than three people in a squad. The strength and the effectiveness of the squad does not necessarily rely on numbers completely. And there's also the fact that like, Tachikawa and Izumi managed to, like, retain the status as the top squad even after, from what I can understand, like, losing the captain. There is some ambiguity there, so I don't know if Azuma, like, he was the first sniper, but if he was, like, a leader of the top A-rank squad before, so was it, like, another squad, or was he, like, a former member of Tachikawa squad? It's interesting how that happened. Azuma's a very interesting character in general. So like every time we meet him, we get to see his teaching side. First of all, being the commander in the neighbor invasion, and now this, and he kind of gently tutors these kind of two aces in the making. It's a really compelling dynamic that we kind of see.
Yeah, it's like he offers them advice, but, like, even if they make a call, it's like, I wouldn't necessarily do that, but, you know, you give it a try, and he's not going to, like, stop them or anything.
He allows them to make mistakes and kind of gently nudges them in the right direction, encouraging their input, most of all.
Yeah, also, I guess it's just, like, you know, a different person, a different style is going to work for every person. Like, you know, molding your people into the exact same type of person fighter you are isn't necessarily going to be helpful. I think one element of this volume I found quite interesting is the red herring foreshadowing with Jin's bet, where it's like he offers to make this bet with Hughes, and you kind of think, oh, what does he know about this fight? Does he reckon they've got it? And then you find out they lose, but he still seems pretty confident in this bet. So it's like, what does he know? that puts this forward.
I guess you'll find out in the spoiler corner.
And another thing that I think is an interesting thing that could be an instance of Hovind forgot, because it's probably explained later what is meant by this, but the perspective from Kitora that Kazuma is being soft on Osamu is interesting. Is it perhaps the idea that he is giving him supportive advice despite being quite harshly critical, over just saying that he should just give up. And also the fact that he prefaces it with, like, what Osamu's is doing well.
We also get a ship moment with Kitoro when Osamu acknowledges that she taught him the strength of Garnet figures, and she's surprised that, oh, he remembered that. So Chris must be very happy.
Aww.
I've got slight criticism towards the thing that happens in this volume, perhaps. The first time I read World Trigger, I thought that I must have missed something in the previous volumes when Chika's arc about not being able to shoot people started. Tamakoma just, like, knowing about this without a big reveal feels kind of a little off given the importance of it. I know the premise of this character arc was, like, subtly sprinkled in the previous Rank War matches, but I don't think the value of that subtlety can outweigh the problem of Chika not having that much of an outward emotional life as a character up till that point. So I wish her struggle were kind of established more strongly before, like perhaps in a big moment early on during the invasion when she had to shoot one of the humanoid neighbors, but would find herself unable to, which would result in some negative consequences. I still think her character arc in that is really strong. It's just the setup to it is a little weak.
I can see that. I think my only real criticism of the volume, and I've sort of gone back and forth on this for a little while, I don't love Yuma having partially learned the Mantis by the end of the match. I personally think it's a little bit too soon in the grand scheme of things, and I think it would have been a reveal better saved for a later match, rather than this sort of... I feel like it would be a stronger catharsis if it was at another match rather than this one.
You know what? I have to admit, I read this a few times, and I didn't notice that he copied Kagura's attack.
Oh, yeah. Is that, like, the long-reaching one?
Yes.
Using the scorpion as a whip.
Right, yeah. Yeah, again, it didn't even register to me, because it's like, oh, you know, that's to what scorpions can do, but I don't memorize the attacks very well, so that's fair.
Nova has a good point, though. It feels like it should be a bigger moment, and I've got kind of the same problem with Chika's arc, where it feels like it should be a bigger moment for, like, them to find that out, and Ashihara doesn't really do that, and sometimes it works, and in this case it doesn't. It just, you know, makes you not notice it sometimes.
Right, I don't know. I guess it's just there was a lot going on in this match. Them mentioning it beforehand and the detail that Chika did used her radar rather than eyeballing it is cool kind of enough for me, but I could see it being an issue.
Apart from the match, we also had some interesting training arcs, especially for Osamu. I found it quite interesting how, like, there seems to be a split among the gunners and shooters regarding the fact if gunners and shooters shoot on points by themselves or not. It's interesting that there doesn't seem to be, like, any given answer. Like, Izumi and Ninomiya obviously think that, yeah, should be able to earn points, but Arashiyama and Scruffy Hottie think that they work best in a support role, don't they?
Yeah, I think I guess one thing I have for the training is Toma says to Izumo, "You're too far to the left." Oh, that's just what a teammate of Anime Thunderfoot would say. if you want to get all the jokes, you have to listen to the question corner. Reminder.
Oh god. Yeah, I did find Toma coaching Izuho was quite adorable, and it seems like Grail wasn't right about him being a bad teacher, so.
Yeah, also just like just the panel where he's just like, I have a cat on my head. is very nice.
The evil kitty hijinks were great, especially how he wouldn't stop shooting even with a cat on his head.
I was gonna say, like, it's kind of interesting that that three of the teams have some baggage with Hatahara, as is established before the match, although it doesn't really play into the match itself much, but it does give Chika some perspective on another character that had trouble choosing people, and perhaps kind of a sense of what could go wrong. What pressure is there to be able to do that?
Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not the only fan of the giant crab alarm clock in Tachikawa Squad's strategy room. Did you folks notice that?
I didn't catch it. One observation I have is, I feel like for some kinds of people, like, it might be a sticking point of, why would they use both you know, melee weapons and firearms in X setting, because firearms are better, and I feel like the chapter here explaining the composition of bullets, it sort of helps to illustrate that here with how Treon swords are actually more effective, in terms of, like, you know, their raw destructive capability, whereas there's a lot more variable for bullets.
Yes, speaking of people fighting with swords, I find it an interesting detail that, like, despite breaking through, like, Ko's defenses once, Yuma still mostly loses against Murakami in solo matches. It shows how powerful his sleep learning side effect is, and that he continues to learn. And sometimes just one win in a key match isn't enough, and the main character isn't just stronger afterwards.
Oh yeah, speaking of Murakami, I do find it funny that there is kind of a conga line of the ace that they beat in the last match helps them meet one of the aces from the new match.
Yeah.
Because Arafune introduced Murakami, and then Murakami introduces Kagura.
It does feel a little bit like RPG side quests. A little bit.
I do have to remember in Spoiler Corner if this happens again. I love the running gag of Osamu thinking, okay, but why is Yuiga A rank number one again? He also questions several times in his thoughts, and like, who is this person? Tachikawa's big speech was great. I'm not really going to get into it a bit because, like, I think I gave it as one of my favorite funniest moments in the introductory episode. It's cute to see Kako giving Valentine's chocolates both to Kazama and Ayatsuji. I wonder if Tsuji is going to grow up to perform Rakugo, quite similar to Yakumo from Shouigen Roku Rakugo Shinju. I kept hearing different sources for whether Ninomiya is the number one or number two shooter. But this volume seems to confirm number two, and Izumi is number one, which is what I thought, but I checked the wiki earlier and Izumi was unranked and Ninomiya was number one. I don't know, maybe change later.
Is it maybe that Izumi is the number one overall combatant? Or...
I was under the impression Ninomiya was the number one shooter. But...
I distinctly remember a chapter. I'll go and check. I think that one of the chapters established that he was number two. It will make sense for Izumi to be number one, honestly, because God. If I could just summarize this volume in one sentence, it would probably be Narasaka's line, "Points aren't everything," since we get to see... It kind of works thematically with Kagura and Hatahara. While this philosophy gives some hope to the likes of Osamu and Chika, who desperately climb to improve themselves, this volume is also a wake-up call for them. After all, as Kitora says, it takes more than a week for effort to bear fruit, which is my favourite line from the series.
Shall we move into the Ashihara Comments Corner?
Okay, let's get to the Ashihara Comments Corner.
So with the detail that Yuma eats more than other people, I think there's a revelation here. There is an archetypal shonen battle main character in here. He just does the gluttony part off screen. It was in one of the Q&A ones about like how Yuma nourishes himself because he doesn't sleep, obviously. And another one is that like different levels of Treon and different in people taking different amounts of time to recover during rest could be a really interesting thing to play around with in situations where squads aren't given as much time to rest. It doesn't really come up in these matches because obviously they're allowed to rest between matches. Like, they only do one, a squad will only do one a day, but yeah.
I do have some on the strategy rooms, continuing from the previous volume, how some of the squads kind of organize them. I'm daft because I thought that the beds are like beds to sleep in, but in fact the like mattresses that people land on when they bail out. That's why the co-ed, and that's why... But it's also interesting to have four of these beds with three combatants, so... I mean, in Arashiyama squad I'm not surprised, but...
Yeah, maybe they just account for the fact that there might be another... there might be an extra person, or there might be an additional person to the squad.
I forgot if, like, operators are in Trine bodies, or if, like, they remain in the regular bodies for the matches.
I mean, I feel like that might just be a thing for, like, away missions, since there's really no need for them to be in one otherwise. Speaking of, we're going through all the themes of the rooms, and I can't wait for Kunuchika to drop some offhand comment that she's not some gamer girl who talks about video games she's never beaten. It's throwing a bit of shade at Danganronpa 2.
That line was something. I could have fucking expected Tachikawa's squad to be utter slobs. Tachikawa is a disaster. Also, they use their elite status for having a personal cleaner once a month.
You mentioned in the last volume how it's a bit like gender essentialist to have the operator clean it. But then this volume, it does also seem to sort of imply that it really depends on the squad. Like, Tachikawa and Kagayura do not manage their rooms at all. In terms of housekeeping.
I still won't remove a point from the Ashihara boomer moments count.
Oh no, it's still a thing. Like, it's still enough of a recurring thing that, yeah, it probably is. But, you know, there are some variations.
Kagura not being messy is a surprise. But, like, the fact that none of them except Hikari bring any personal items to the strategy room kind of makes sense. I wouldn't expect them to. Nova, you're the Kagura squad aficionado. What do you think about their old designs? In the extra materials, there were some old designs of the characters, and there was one for Kagura and one for Yuzuru.
I think they're pretty decent. I will say I definitely like their current ones a little bit more. Again, we do learn that they're originally going to have a much larger role in the current series than they currently do. But I will say that overall, I will say I do prefer their designs a lot more. One thing I do like about the old Kagayura design is it sort of seems very similar to his current design in the sense that, like, they're a very expressive character. But then again, maybe it's a bad thing because Ashihara hates drawing his hair, so he doesn't show up as much because of that.
I think Yuzuru originally looked a lot like Ishigami from Kaguya-sama. As opposed to a shy soft lad.
Yeah, I do think that the old designs are definitely appealing, but less distinctive. So I would agree. I'm glad that Yuzuru's rivalry with Osamu was scrapped. I think I root too much for Yuzuru's relationship with Chika for that to be like enjoyable as some sort of a love triangle. So yeah, I think I like how things turned out more the way they are.
No, they are 100% the OTP.
Shall we get to the spoiler corner?
Let's do it.
Regarding Kazuma's final note on the match and how Osamu took it to heart, it's interesting that you would usually expect getting a new strong player to be a cop-out for weaklings in any other sports manga or any other like sports medium in general. But the arc would usually go that you need to work on improving yourself instead, but no, here that's not feasible. Personal skill growth is too uncertain, and if you really want to help your team, then in this case Osamu has to fulfill his job as a captain. And Osamu comes up with the idea to recruit Jin, and you would usually expect that to be a misdirection, like him recruiting someone in general. But no, as we learned, this is exactly like what Kazuma meant, and he should recruit his strong player, and this is his duty as a captain. So I kind of found that interesting.
Yeah, because it's like, it's his, because in a way, it is self-improvement, just it not in the typical way that a battle shonen would do it. It's not in, though there is some honing of his technique, it's also like, adding a new player adds its own challenges of, like, how do you use them? Like, can you become more flexible with how you use your team and how you strategize with them? But yeah, it's definitely him kind of, on the right track, but like, not quite the right person. I don't actually have any spoiler corner comments for this volume, really.
We have fewer and fewer of those.
Yeah, I feel like when we get to like the late teens, or there's just not going to be anything. But yeah.
Nova, do you have any?
Nothing in particular. I will say that I'm hoping for better things out of the current arc, but I haven't been super happy with the way that Kagura Squad has kind of been handled since this match. But judging by how they're sort of being handled in the current arc, I do have a little better hopes for that.
Mm.
just because, you know, I feel like they started off so strong, but I don't think they've sort of been used to their full potential in the series up until now.
Yuzuru has definitely, like, been in the limelight, and I kind of like how he was used over time, but, like, Kaguya himself, and especially how he started interacting with others more, for a long time, there wasn't, like, certainty about what to actually do with him. And I do love that both he and Emma are kind of now stuck in the new squads with Ninomiya squad members, and that's great. Other than that, I will just know that the manga has just become Don't Toy With Me, Miss Katori.
Oh, poor Osamu. Poor Suwa as well.
Yeah.
Shall we get to the interview portion?
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's get to it. Hoban, take the reins.
Okay. So, first of all, who are your favorite characters in World Trigger?
It's a pretty wide list. I would say I do like the lead squad quite a bit. I really like Yuma. I really like Osamu. I really like Chika. Just because we're talking about them, I will say Kagiyora is probably my favorite character in the series. I just find them very, very interesting, and I think they sort of touch on a lot of the things I want to see out of the series, which is the idea of, you know, side effects having negative and positive effects rather than it just being like basically like a one-up superpower. And I think that, you know, his character explores that really well, so that's something I was looking for, and it's happy it came with. I really love his fighting style. I'm a fan of Nasu. I like Kitora quite a bit, of course. We're all Kitora fans in this community for the most part. And
yeah,
in this economy, in terms of characters who haven't shown up yet, but I'm looking forward to, I do like Yuba Squad quite a bit. And then in terms of some people who maybe don't get mentioned as much, I love Kagiyura Squad's operator. I just find them to be like so dynamic, and like for the most part, operators don't really get any screen time. So this is like a really fun character whenever they show up, and I really, really enjoy them.
Oh yeah, there is this part when Emma kind of wants to suggest something to Chika, kind of to change her weaponry. I do love how she turns into a mom and kind of wants to... Oh, Emma, you brought friends! Shall I bring you some tangerine slices or whatever?
If she's sleeping under the kotatsu, it's like, do you live here? What's this?
Yeah, the Yashihara Commons Corner kind of noted on that. This is basically Hikari's den.
No, completely. Like, so Hikari's probably my favorite operator, so I really enjoy whenever they show up.
What are some of your favorite moments in the series?
I would say the moment that I started to kind of turn around on World Trigger, because there was a pretty decent period where I was not in love with how the story was going. I would say the lead-up to the invasion, I think, for me, is where things really started to shift for me. Where I just found the dynamics of the characters really interesting. I found the way that the story was moving was in a much more interesting direction. And I also just found that it was a really good utilization of the cast. Because that was one of my big issues with World Trigger early on. Is I didn't love how the cast was used. But I thought the invasion really, really stepped it up. And that's probably one I really look back on really fondly. I love this match. This match is a great one for me. One of the best matches also is the Ikoma, Tamakoma, and OG squad match. That one I just think is... I think there's another... Is there another squad in that match, or is it just those three?
I believe it. Yeah, it's just those three.
Okay, that whole match I just think is fantastic. It's one of those matches where it's not exactly low stakes, but it's just a really fun match. And it's just one of those ones where, like, it's not like you're not reading it like, oh god, what's going to happen? You're kind of reading it like, this is really fun. I kind of want to see where this is going.
Yeah, it's very, like, lighthearted and creative. If you could personalize an activation word or saying paired with a gesture, for your own trigger, what would it be?
I kind of want to just go for the Power Rangers thing and be like, it's Morphin time. But also, I don't know, it's hard because I just feel like, like, I'd want to say something cool, but something I would never say in my everyday life. So, again, probably just probably something cheesy, because I feel like if you have just something so ridiculous, you just have to say, like, I feel like it's one of those things that's cool in manga, but I don't think there's any cool way in real life to say it. So, like, just I just embrace the cheese, I guess.
Yeah.
I have some further questions. So, like, you are the voice of Yuma and Jin in the Abridged series. So, like, if you ever got the chance to, which other characters would you like to have played? And what voices would you have used?
I did have a Sean Connery voice, and I still forget who was going to have it. But that was something.
Yeah, I think I suggested Shinoda, but then Grail thought that it didn't fit Shinoda. I forgot who we ended up on. Maybe Yotaro?
Possibly. That would have been pretty funny. I had an idea briefly about voicing Kazama as Stitch, just because he's, like, so tiny. So just the idea of, like, showing up being like, Osamu, come on, let's do a match together. Or just, like, trying to, like, just doing all the cool Kazama lines, but in the Stitch voice.
That's a strong contender to Hovind's Ben Shapiro impression.
Oh, God. there was one more that I'm blanking on, but I remember I had a deadpan voice for Ikoma, like this really deep, like I had the idea of, like, it's basically a deadpan Gaston voice for Ikoma. So it's just like if Gaston from Beauty and the Beast was, like, really, like, on Ritalin. That was essentially the idea.
I like that.
Yeah, those were the ones that come to mind. I feel like there were more, but those are the ones that come to mind for me.
I like how this question is definitely not a nudge to people to support Wensleydale Cheddar on Patreon to possibly revive World Trigger Abridged.
Yeah, each time we hit a milestone, we will be making a new episode of that, and we're just a few bucks away from episode 3, but it has been in editing purgatory for a few years now since the Adobe project has broken down.
Oh, yeah.
Resurrect it! Revive it! You can do it! I was talking to the patron, to the potential patrons, of course.
My other question would be, since you are an expert chef, which border agent do you think would be the best cook? And what kind of cuisine would they be into?
I think, like, in terms of the ones we've actually seen in the series, we know that, like, all of Tamakoma 1 are pretty good cooks. So we've mentioned that Kageyura, like, his family owns an okonomiyaki restaurant. So he'd probably be good at that Japanese comfort food. And it is mentioned that Kako really loves to cook, though it doesn't mention the quality.
Oh, yeah, Kako cooks the rice that almost killed Tsutsumi, I think.
They did do that, and they also, I think that was the squad that, like, remade their operation room. So, like, the kitchenette and the living room were kind of the same thing. I think that's the squad. I'll have to review the map. So those ones come to mind. I picture Ninomiya being really good at breakfast. I don't know why. Just the idea of, like, Ninomiya, like just casually making himself an omelet in the morning seems to fit for me. So those are all the ones that come to mind, just in terms of, like, yeah, I feel like we've gotten hints of these along the way.
Is there something else that you would like to tell us about your World Trigger journey? Like, how it all started? You've mentioned that you weren't getting into World Trigger for a long time until the invasion, right?
I had a little bit of an issue because there is a point early on in World Trigger where a lot of characters are introduced to be defeated by other characters. And it takes a little while for the series to kind of even it out. Like, so, like, the first introduction to Miwa, like, he gets immediately schooled by Yuma. And, of course, it makes sense. Yuma has the black trigger. But I just didn't feel it was a great introduction to the character. And that's sort of how I felt when Jin and Arashiyama squad are sort of protecting Yuma and all the other A-rank agents come to try and take their trigger. I personally don't love that sequence. Even upon reread, I just don't think it's a great introduction to a lot of these characters, and I don't think it reads particularly well. It's also a little bit confusing to me in terms of the resolution, where, you know, Jin sort of like, I'll allow you use of the Fujin, and even now it just sort of turns back to like, yeah, we just kind of gave the Fujin back to him.
It's like, he fucking checkmated us. It's like, okay, I, the most adept at using this very useful weapon, will allow you to give it to whoever you want.
Yeah, it just seemed a little bit odd to me at the time. I was like, I don't understand. Like, you just had an entire, like, sequence showing that Jin is essentially unbeatable when they have the Fujin. And Jin is on their side. So it just, it didn't seem like a negotiation to me. It didn't really seem to make sense. It's sort of like if the Red Power Ranger was like, you can have my Mega Morpher. And they're like, you should actually keep that. You've been doing pretty well with this. That didn't grab me.
I could get that, but like the introduction of all these characters definitely wasn't very inviting at the start.
Yeah, so that was some of my thoughts for the first while, and again, it did start to gradually shift, and I'm sort of with two minds about World Trigger in the sense that I do kind of love it for what it is, while also understanding the frustration of being like, oh my god, a third meeting chapter in a row. Like, so that's...
It's going to be very interesting when we get to recapping those chapters, because... I know Wenzel and I do have differing thoughts on them, though. I am enjoying the past couple.
Yeah, I do. So that's sort of my thoughts on, like, World Trigger as a whole, where, like, I do really, really enjoy it, but I do... I do always try to remind myself to take a step back and just say, like, this is long, and this is a very hard series to get into. So, but it is still one that I really look forward to whenever it shows up.
It is definitely a case of, if you love these characters, if you are getting into, like, finding out who the new ones are, you will love this. If you're just reading this and can just about understand who the major characters are, you are going to find it incredibly fascinating, so I could understand that. Shall we round up, folks?
Let's do it.
So that is going to do it for the 13th episode of Duckface Diaries. You can listen to us on so many podcast hosting sites: Anchor, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Breaker, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Podbay, Play FM, Listen Notes, Castro, Google Podcasts. Anchor.fm/WenzelDaleCheddar or YouTube.com/C/WenzelDaleCheddar is where all the links are. You can find all of them on Patreon.com/WenzelDaleCheddar in the pinned post. Remember that, much like the neighborhood, the YouTube algorithm is a dark abyss of sorrows and woes from which channels like these never resurface. And what helps us navigate it is liking, subscribing, and sharing the podcast with a friend. On the YouTube channel and the same RSS feed, you get access to not only Duckface Diaries, but Manga Mosaic, a collection of podcasts and video essays on other manga titles, short and long alike, and any long-running retrospective projects that we may come up with in the future. Nova, where can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at Jonah Snow. Just if you want to follow just my random endeavors and whatnot. You can look for the Bard's Tale podcast, which someday I might revive if I manage to have enough supplementary income to hire an editor. Yeah, just look forward to whatever I may put out there later on.
I listened to the first few stories, and I was quite hooked, so I'm looking forward to whenever you can restart it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well.
So, follow our sister show?
Yes, Hoven's Hideaway, a miscellaneous podcast where we mainly discuss manga. I've not put out much on my podcast or YouTube channel in a while,
but people might as well check out your podcast about the Attack on Titan ending that you did with Jacob Parker Dalton of OtaQuest. Might as well, in preparation for the video essay that I'm going to release in just a few decades. I really am out of video essay juice. If you'd like to help me upload these on a regular basis, consider supporting me on patreon.com/WenzelDaleCheddar. In return for your support, you get access to rewards such as adding your name to the YouTube credits or getting a World Trigger Duckface avatar. Help me reach goals such as reviving World Trigger Bridged. Each time we hit a milestone, I will be making a new episode of that. And we're a few bucks away from episode 3, so look forward to that for your consideration. The video essay goals have been temporarily switched off because lately I've been kind of in a mood for creative projects rather than analytical ones, so if I commit something, I want it to be something that I won't get burned out on. Send us emails, questions, comments, suggestions at wenzeldale012@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at DuckfaceDiaries or individual Twitters at WenzyCheddar and at Hoven with an H. A sincere thank you to Milo Jack Stillitz, who composed our ending theme, an orchestral rendition of Giri Giri, the first opening sequence for World Trigger. You can find his work at soundcloud.com/MiloJackStillitz. What are we covering next time?
Next time, we're covering Volume 14, which is chapters 116 to 124, and episodes 71 to 73 of the anime, wrapping up Season 1, and also contains the first episode of Season 2, which I think I think going forward, I might go really nuts and also watch along as well as read with volumes going forward, because I'd definitely be up for rewatching season two.
Holy shit, are we going to have an anime recap?
I mean, I might point out things that are like, okay, this is done slightly different in the anime, this was done slightly different in the manga, or something like that, but we'll see.
It'd be great to have two summary sections and they'd be exactly the same. Except in this case, whoa, the eyes look so pretty and the movement, whoa.
Tachikawa just pulled out his, he just unsheathed his sword and it looked so good.
So that's coming in August. In July, though, we're going to change things up a bit and record a special episode covering Border Briefing File, the World Trigger Data Book. Right then. Thanks very much, Nova, for coming on. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure and privilege. I had a lot of fun.
Hope to have you again sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And apart from that, then this was the 13th episode of Duckface Diaries, and as always, it's time to
bugger off!